Moncrief on News Talk.
It's time to solve every single possible problem you can think of. In the studio, once again, Declan Buckley and huge Gene Hackman fan, Barbara Scully. Barbara was just boring us with a list of all the films he was in.
Including Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which he wasn't in at all, apparently. Oh,
but, dear. You know, Barbara. Gene somebody.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do.
I
met my ex last week after we reconnected on Facebook earlier this year. I'm married nearly 20 years to a wonderful man and we've a good life together and two teenage children. But when I got a friend request from my ex, my heart skipped a beat. He's still the man I think about all these years later. I've never felt chemistry like it. And we were just young and stupid. Ultimately, he broke my heart and moved away and I rebuilt my life. I met my now husband shortly after and just gone on with my life. And my life has been fine, but I've always thought about my ex. The messages were pretty friendly initially, but got quite flirty. When we met last week, it was as if no time had passed and we slipped back into our old dynamic. He's now also married, but not happy in his relationship. We kissed, but I made sure not to take it any further. I've been racked by guilt since. We're also messaging non-stop. I can't help myself and I just want to be around him.
Not that racked then.
Yeah, obviously not.
I'm a bit racked by the guilt. Yeah, a bit racked. Not racked.
I feel so bad about this.
This to me is an easy one because I think that this is something that perhaps I'd say happens reasonably regularly now with social media, you know, that nobody's ever gone out of your life for good necessarily. They can wander back in at any time. But I think that the situation that this woman is in is now potentially very dangerous. The two sentences that jump out of her letter to me were early on when she says, I'm married nearly 20 years to a wonderful man and we have a good life together with two teenage children. And then she also says at the very end, I just can't help myself. I just want to be around him. Mm. The first line about being married to the wonderful man with the teenage kids, like that's very precious. If you have found somebody with whom you're happy to spend your days with and you've two kids together and you've probably got a house together and a mortgage together and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's not something you throw away lightly. And this woman is in danger of doing exactly that, which will not only potentially break her husband's heart, but also deeply upset and have a potentially negative impact on her children. Like, it's one thing to walk away from a marriage if you, you know, obviously if you're unhappy, deeply unhappy, or if you've been the subject of abuse or anything like that. But she's been quite happy. She said her life is fine. Mm. The man she's married to is great. So that's not something to take for granted or to mess around with in the way that she is. I know it's very exciting to meet up with somebody who you were in love with and there was a big lot of sexual chemistry, but you should never meet up with that person unless you're absolutely 100% sure that you are gone beyond that, you know, attraction or that kind of chemistry that there is between us. And the fact that they kissed the last time they met means she's on a really slippery slope. And my advice is absolutely unambiguous. She needs to... Unless she needs to stop seeing him immediately, stop messaging him, unless she's very sure that she wants to drive a horse and cart through her life.
Yeah, when she went to meet the ex anyway, if she was to be really honest with herself.
She would.
Because she agreed to meet this
guy. Yeah, exactly,
Even agreeing to meet him.
It's stupid. It's really stupid.
She might deceive herself that, oh no, we're just friends.
We're just friends, you know. You're not.
Yeah, and you know, when you're in that situation, there is obviously, you're talking about the rational side of, you know, your obligations to your life as you've created it, as opposed to the kind of...
thrill.
Selfish thrill side of putting yourself first. Maybe she's been putting the family first for such a long time. So it's kind of it's a novelty to kind of turn herself into a character from a, you know, very dramatic episode of EastEnders she gets to go off and see the guy and they have a chat and they have the kiss, but she didn't go any further. It's all very, you know, it's all very dramatic and it's kind of... It's also a bit juvenile as well, because it's like she's letting it happen while pretending that she's having this control over it, but she's still going along with, you know, the road that's going to a certain place. That when does she get back onto the road that she's been on?
Yeah. So,
and it's one of those ones where you go, do you actually know what it is that you want from life? Mm. Do you really believe that the other guy is having the same kind of experience as you are? Because what are you actually willing to throw away and for what? Do you see what I'm saying? That there's a kind of a, you know, she's already described the good life that she has, as you mentioned, Barbara, about her husband and her kids. And that's the kind of the gamble. That's what she's thrown on the table. And then she's willing to go off and kiss this guy. And already that stuff is risked, by the way, because, you know, if anybody saw that, or there was kind of, you know, any reason for people to find out that they'd met up, she's already in breach of her kind of, you know, her, the integrity of her relationship with her husband, at least. So I kind of think it needs to shift away from the kind of the silliness of like, I'm just going to go along this, because she's like young and stupid. She's reverting back to where she is young. Neither she nor her or this guy are still young.
Yeah,
they might
exactly.
be still stupid, but they're not young anymore. No. And they're not those people anymore.
And also, like, it's not even just about throwing away your life. You have a commitment if you have children and if you've gone into a long-term relationship with somebody. You know, there is such a thing as that commitment that you gave to your partner and, more
importantly,
to
your children. That feels like a responsibility, and it doesn't feel like fun, and it doesn't feel like you're putting yourself first.
But that's what being a grown-up is about.
Yeah.
The other thing which she should recognise is that she has everything to lose. He doesn't have as much to lose because she said he's not happy in his relationship.
He said.
So he said, yeah, yeah, whether he is or not. But obviously,
that's what I was going to say as
she
well.
She has way more to lose.
It's really important for her to consider, as well as what she thinks she is getting out of this scenario and what she believes is happening, what does he think is happening and what's he up to? Because, you know, he's already packed his bags and walked away from her before. He put himself above her and that broke her heart. So he already has the credentials to do that again.
But he has all the power in this instance as well. If it's true that his relationship isn't happy anyway, and as you say, he's walked away before and he's still the one in the driving seat and she's acting like, you know, a kind of
lovesick
fool. Lovesick little girl. Like, so she'd want to...
He put in the friendship request. He did. So he approached her first.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because he's not
And
happy.
She made herself... The minute she went click yes, she's opened up that kind of thing. And I'm not suggesting that you can't be friends with your exes and all that, but what I am suggesting is that the attraction, or she used the word dynamic, that you had back in the day is not necessarily the dynamic that you have now, because the people that you are have changed and what you're bringing to the table has changed. She's coming to the table as a married mother.
Yeah, but that's really interesting you should say that, because, and I'm not talking about somebody who I might have been romantically involved with in my past, but for example, friends I was in school with, there's a group of us, maybe six or seven of us, and we meet up maybe twice a year. And it is always amazing because we weren't all in contact for a long number of years. And then we kind of got back in contact again and we meet up now every so often. We meet up as our younger selves.
Yeah.
Nobody is really interested in, well, who did you marry and how many kids do you have? Yeah. We don't care.
Yeah.
We actually go right back to just being ourselves, which is amazing in a friendship sense. So this, I can imagine how amazing it is when you're a busy, you know, wife and mother and suddenly you're meeting, you know.
But she's going back in time to the guy she was kissing. She's going back in time to the guy who broke her heart.
Yes. Yeah.
So there's a power imbalance there that.
Absolutely.
She's never going to fix that wound by going back, and it's not like sliding doors where she can go back in time and change everything and she's going to make herself feel better. Whatever she does, she's going to be hurt in some way. She can never get rid of the old hurt, and she, particularly not
and
by
along
making
the
new
way,
hurt.
She's potentially going to cause huge hurt to the people she
Now, there could be a version of this story where this guy is, you know, in that stupid sentence, the one, and they could end up being very happy together, and whatever consequence, whatever actions that need to happen in order for that to happen could be like a dynamite to her life, but it could
highly
end up being
unlikely.
But it's really narrow, isn't it? That's what I was going to say. It's an unlikely end result, but it could be.
This is logic, and pretty much everyone texting in is saying the same thing. But I don't know, it just seems to me that we're to use logic against the ache in this woman's loins. I don't know if that's the argument that's going to sway
that's
her.
What
but
I'm
it is,
saying,
again, it is only an ache in her loins. She doesn't wake up like, you
but
know
she
what
has
I mean?
To, she has to ask herself, whose loins is it really aching? It's aching the 19-year-old girl whose heart was broken. She is well grown up past that now and she needs to, you know, tap into the
and
other
also
resources.
She needs to recognise that even if he is the one, like, no relationship remains at that heightened level of kind of excitement and attraction that she's experiencing right now, especially because it's putting her in touch with her younger self and blah, 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 blah. Even if they do sail off into the sunset, the two of them together, and she leaves her husband and her kids behind, that relationship will eventually become a different relationship, because that's what happens when you've been with somebody for a long time.
When you convert that lustiness into something kind of a bit more mundane.
Fundamental, but yeah. It is more, yeah, mundane or pedestrian, you know?
Yeah.
She sounds a bit immature now to me.
Yeah, I'd say, someone says, I'd imagine reality would kick in fairly quickly when she's picking his dirty jocks off the ground and dealing with the mundane daily grind. Anne says, I knew a woman in the US, so after being widowed, got back with the love of her life. Only to find he was still telling the same jokes and was as boring as hell. People don't change. Yeah. And if he dumped her once, he's just not worth it.
Yeah.
A lot of people saying versions on the same thing. Yeah. A lot of people not really believing the I'm not happy in my marriage line.
Okay.
I don't think that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. Mm.
Yeah, she's just not racked by guilt enough, though. Strange enough.
It's exciting, and I get that. Yeah. Like, it is exciting. And, you know, when you do become a mother and you're in a long, you do kind of feel, I often like think, you know, when we talk about older women starting to feel invisible, I think there's nothing more than having kids to make you feel invisible. And you do kind of lose yourself. So she's found this part of herself again with the attention she's getting. And I get that.
And then she's back being the main player in the story.
And only her. Like, she's coming without kids and the husband. I get that.
But that's
a pipe dream
because there's no, when there's no, she's never going to be able to not be a mother with the children, that she, the wife that she is, because, you know, in order to unbecome that, she needs to do some very radical stuff.
Our general answer is C in court.
Yes.
I work in an open plan office environment. My line manager hired me 6 months ago and has been hugely influential in helping me to level up within the company. However, his personal hygiene has started to make my work life more and more uncomfortable. He's a chronic nose picker. Whoa. He does it surreptitiously, using very swift hand movements, so it's very hard for anyone to catch him exactly in the act. Despite this, on occasion, I have seen him pick and taste, and worse still, pick and place under a desk or even on the armrest of office furniture. The trouble is this. That's not the trouble. The trouble is this. We are a hot desking office, and I'm now constantly terrified I will encounter one of his errant boogers wherever I sit. It has made me feel just so nervous and uncomfortable at work, but I find it impossible to think of a way to deal with such an odd situation. What can I do? We don't have a WFH policy. I don't know what that is.
Work from home.
Working from home. Right,
I didn't know what it was either.
I thought it was some sort of anti-snot policy.
Or witchcraft.
Yeah. I think we should start this by apologising to anybody who might be eating while they're listening to us.
Well, I mean, if they're eating a quarter past three.
They have a different schedule to us.
Excuse me, Your Majesty.
Can I go back to the mother with the kids who's just in from the school run and probably didn't have time to have her lunch? She's eating. Apologies.
I love the description.
Well, but she's well used to seeing snots everywhere.
As loath as I am to be having another one of these disgusting conversations, I loved the kind of description of how this guy does his nose picking, about how it's kind of like he's like a cross between like a magician.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's kind of like,
now you see it.
Yeah, now you don't. Yeah. You know, over here, look into my eyes. Look into my eyes. Not into my nose.
It's up my sleeve. Yeah. It's behind my ear.
But I think also the very kind of elaborate description of his actions kind of revealed a sort of a fixation from her perspective on what's going on. Now, I'm not going to come for her in this, but I am saying that, you know, maybe part of the solution to this is to try to be less obsessed about the behaviour, because that might help you just chill a little bit. That notwithstanding, it is kind of gross, and it is particularly gross if you're sharing like a desktop space with him, because there's a little bit of a power imbalance in this scenario, because he's the boss. You can't kind of be forthright in the situation the way you might be with a casual friend or somebody who's just, you know, on the same level as you in the organisation. So you can't just say, you know, oh, stop picking your nose, or something a bit more straight up. But you could perhaps do something like hand a tissue to the guy whenever he's at his nose without saying anything.
Even if he's doing elaborate hand movements.
He's doing his own thing and just hand the tissue. And what that will do is it'll kind of...
He'll pull that out of his sleep.
He'll turn it into a bouquet of flowers.
Part of his magic act.
Turn it into a dove. Yeah. It will fly away.
Or he'll use it to obscure what he's doing behind it.
Behind like a veil. No, what I mean is that what that will do is it's a subtle thing. You just hand him the thing, and then he goes, "What's that for?" And then, "Oh, I just thought
your
nose is bothering you or something like that," and move on with the conversation and just do that a couple of times.
And so he knows that you know.
And that's the only way I can think about doing it that's subtle and unlikely to cause the kind of offence that him picking the nose is offending her. Because apart from that, I can't think of anything.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I agree with you, because one of the things that I thought as well, that she needs to work on getting this out of her head as well, because I think she's kind of become a bit obsessed about it, as you do when something starts to annoy you. So it's very...
She should write a short story though, because she did. She's a fairly good bit of prose
there. We can see it very well. But the other thing which I was going to suggest, I mean, I like your suggestion about the giving him a handkerchief or a tissue or whatever. But I do think that, and I've never experienced hot desking, wasn't a thing when I was in an office. But I do think we all, and this, I don't want to put anybody else off their food, but we all trail bits of ourselves. Do you know what I mean?
If you're at a desk. That's true.
Bits of skin, bits of nails.
Slugs.
Bits of snot, whatever.
Bits of your sandwiches that you've had. Yeah.
I think if you're hot desking and if this guy's habits are interfering with your head, I would carry some sanitizer with you.
Have you ever seen Naomi Campbell getting into first class in the plane?
No.
She comes in, she arrives, she sits down, takes her bag out, she starts spraying and wiping
the
surfaces down everywhere.
Yeah.
And then she's able to chill out and relax into her first class.
But that's what I would
suggest
this woman does. A couple of little wipes, a couple of spray, and just spray and clean off your desk if you're hot desk. What are you looking at?
You need sandpaper if he's got rock hard snots welded to the bottom of the desk. Oh my God.
I forgot about the under the desk.
Yeah.
When I was a kid in school, I used
to think about this really
in the boys' school, finding chewing gum underneath the.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you'd be like, what is that? It's disgusting.
Yeah. Like super big snots. I think she should tell everyone. Every single person in the. Or start saying, have you noticed that, Tommy has this. Knuckle up his nose half the time. If everyone's aware of it, then everyone's watching him. And then perhaps, because he's kind of aware he's doing it because he's trying to do it surreptitiously. But if he perhaps gets a message that everyone's actually catching me doing this, maybe he might mend his ways.
Some people though have these impulses that they can't control. And I read somewhere that, in autism are called stims. They're the kind of the involuntary tics that people have that sometimes they involve having a good old pick up your nose or whatever. So there could be...
You're talking about is making my nose itch. It's like when you get the head lice nose.
I'm feeling
that
now as well.
The reason I'm saying that though is because sometimes it can be, there might be a certain amount of compassion required for the person.
Why would you be sticking it under the desk? That's gross. That's the thing. I didn't think about
people
that.
People aren't aware though. It's
just disgusting.
It is disgusting. But it's if you're not aware you're doing something...
Yeah, we're not really being much help to her at all.
I think the hankies is the way. Bring it into the conscious world.
I've nothing else to offer except that.
If you come to the desk
and
you sanitize it.
Don't investigate under the desk. Do you know what I mean?
Just don't look.
Just don't look under the desk. He's gone under the desk.
Okay, don't look there.
Is there anything under the desk?
As a person.
As a person. Henry McKean was sitting there not too long ago.
He's still under the desk.
He left a person.
These are listener suggestions. Okay. Tell your texter to freak out in the office at the top of our voice. Who snot is on this desk? Maybe. In regards to Barbara's apology to people eating during the nose-picking story, I much appreciate that, as I'm having my breakfast here in the US.
Oh, well, you see, there you go.
That's
go.
Nice. What are you having?
What are you having? She's in the US.
Porridge.
Granola.
Lucky Charms, probably.
Yeah. Those multicolour jokes.
With the Irish thing
with
on
the
front.
Irish shamrock.
Makes it all kind of very...
Okay, I want to know
top of the morning to you.
What are you having for your breakfast?
Type a note saying that everyone knows he's picking his nose and discreetly leave it on his desk when he gets up. There's no way he'll ask who put the note there. In fact, he'll probably leave the company and the country very soon after, hoping that he never encounters anyone from that company ever again. Elle says that girl needs to act dumb and say to her manager or HR... that it seems someone has been wiping snots under the desks and to ask them to send a circular asking everyone to be more respectful to their colleagues.
That's actually a very good idea. That's a good idea. That's very good.
Yeah.
Let's go with that then.
Just tell the person, if you're insulted about being told that you're picking your nose, you shouldn't be in management. I told a guy I work for that his breath stank years ago. Still work with him. He was thankful for me telling him.
Okay.
Okay.
Not sure it's going to work.
Yeah, that'll really work.
Not endorsing that.
I've met this amazing guy.
All right.
The thing is, when you start with a problem with, I met this amazing guy, you're kind of going to find out why he's not.
Yeah.
He's been my best partner I've ever had in the 4 months that we've been dating. I was cheated on in all.
He's been the best partner in the last 4 months, like.
Yeah, compared to the first 4 months of all the others. Yeah, I'm assuming.
Okay.
I was cheated on in all my previous relationships, so I'm really nervous about letting my walls down because I've been hurt so badly before. My last relationship was with my daughter's father, and we broke up when she was only 6 months old. I was absolutely broken by it, as I found out he cheated throughout my whole pregnancy too. This experience really shattered me as a person, and I wasn't really interested in anything serious until this guy came along. My new boyfriend is so considerate and makes me feel safe and loved, even though it's such early days. The thing is, I haven't introduced him to my daughter yet. She's nearly two, and I can't cope with the idea of her getting attached to somebody. He's been asking if he can meet her and is saying all the right things, but I just don't know if I can trust him yet. My family know how much I've been through, and they think I need to take a leap of faith, but taking on another person's child is a lot. I don't even know how I'd make it work. It makes me so nervous I don't want to lose him.
Wow. Okay, so been here, done that, introducing a child to a new partner. So I fully understand this woman's reluctance, you know, to expose her daughter to somebody who may not be a permanent fixture in her life. I totally get that. But that said, in life, we have to take risks on a regular basis, and we try and balance the risk and weigh up, you know, the pros and cons of the risk, and then make the best decision that we can. In this case, the daughter's only two. But even that said, I do think that kids, number one, are much more resilient than we think. And number two, are smarter than we often give them credit for. So if I was this woman, and as I say, I have been, although my daughter was a bit older, like I would explain it in turn. I would introduce her at this stage. If she likes this guy, it's 4 months in. I would introduce him to the daughter. To the daughter, I would say that this is mummy's friend. You know, I'm sure the daughter too doesn't have any notion really of romantic relationships, or, you know, I certainly, and I'm sure she wouldn't, like, there'd be no, like, this is your new daddy, or you can call him daddy, or any of that stuff. It's just mummy's friend, and I would leave it at that, and make it very clear to the new boyfriend that he has got to take it very slow and very much at the child's pace, and not, you know, be trying to, I'm sure he won't if he's a nice, considerate guy, but not trying to buy into her affections or any of that kind of stuff. And if my experience is anything to go by, my daughter was probably about six or seven, and I remember I introduced her to two partners, one of whom became my husband in the end. But the first one, I remember her in absolutely no uncertain terms telling me that I was never to be anywhere with him and her again. She just did not like him.
Wow.
And I brought it.
And that's like, how we met.
Never. And I remember then when I introduced her to Paul eventually, within about a month, I'd say, of her knowing Paul, she casually asked him, we were only going out maybe 3 months at this stage, she casually asked him, would he do her the favour of marrying her mom? That would be great. So she was a better judge of character than I was when it came to men.
That's so interesting.
So, like, that's the truth. That is genuinely the truth. So, I mean, I do think, you know, we need to give kids, and I think what kids thrive on always is honesty. I think they can smell a rat a mile off.
Yeah, I totally agree. They know if you're being insane.
They know if you're giving them.
Yeah, if you're doing all that.
I do also think that's a kind of at the nub of the whole thing, because for the woman that wrote this letter in, she is tormented by the conflict between her instinct and her history. So she has had a history of being let down by people and she's just scared of history repeating itself and then ending up in a situation. And I think, look, the only way to kind of be kind to yourself in that situation is to still keep trusting your instincts. Because most of the time, if you're let down by somebody else, they're the ones who are doing the letting down. I would still at the same time kind of look into what it was that maybe brought the kind of people into her life that were cheating. What does she think that's about? Because she said that she's a history of people being in her life. And
you can be just unlucky as well.
I get all that, but I think you can't just sweep that under the table as well. Yeah. I mean, sometimes people's behaviour, because they kind of expect a certain thing to happen, it can kind of weirdly happen.
Yeah.
So there's something that needs to be looked at from her own kind of, in my view. But I do come back to the thing about it's about hoping for the best and trusting your instinct. Yeah. This guy, he does sound like he.
And I mean,
you know,
the other thing I think that comes into it, and particularly, like, I don't know, she mentions the last person who cheated was her daughter's father. I don't know if the daughter's father is still in their lives in any way. But if you're a single parent, you're feelings of protectiveness towards your child are probably double because you're doing it on your own, and you're very, and also you have a relationship with your child. I feel that's way more intense than you do when you're in a couple with a child. So I, you know, that all makes things a little bit more complicated, you know. And I mean, I know when Paul and I got together, like I was always very kind of sensitive to him disciplining her or anything like that. Mm. And he didn't, because I was so like paranoid about it, you know. And I was such a basket case. I remember telling him, like, absolutely one day that, like, don't ever make me choose between her and you, because you'll lose. And that's where your priority is as a parent, always. And so I get that. But I do think that, you know, this guy seems like a nice guy, and she has to take a chance and hope for the best.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And take it slow.
Just take it slowly.
Agreed.
And good luck.
Does either of you know what sprouted toast is?
Sprout? It sounds like
fungus?
Toast that's been left in the,
I don't know,
in the cupboard for too long. Is that what the Americans have?
Yeah, sprouted toast.
Okay, we need more
banana,
information.
Cottage cheese, an organic coffee, and a dose of advice from the 2E. A healthy curry man.
That sounds like a, you know.
What came after the banana?
Banana, a cottage cheese.
Dose.
An organic coffee.
Okay. I mean, I'm all with the banana.
Yeah.
I'd often have banana on toast, but I don't know what sprouted toast is.
Well, maybe
I don't know
if you leave the cottage cheese on the toast for long enough,
It'll sprout.
Or
it could actually
That's just what it is.
God, I'm fascinated. I'll have to look that up. Sprouted toast.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'd say that's more like, damn you, phone! Right, Barbara and Declan, thank you both very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.